Welcome to the deep dive. We cut through the noise, aiming to get you genuinely well-informed.
That's the goal.
Today, we're tackling something pretty crucial. The bedrock of financial trust.
Audit procedures.
Exactly. We're diving into how auditors actually gather proof, you know, evidence, to make sure financial statements are reliable. Think of it as a quick guide to what's really going on behind the numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's vital stuff.
Okay, so let's unpack this. What makes an audit procedure genuinely good? It's not just like ticking a box, right? Mm-hmm. There seems to be a specific recipe.
There absolutely is. A really robust procedure has three core elements. You need an axiom.
Okay, like inspect or calculate?
Right. Then you apply that action to a specific source.
The source being, say, the asset register or bank statements.
Precisely. And it all has to serve a clear objective. Why are you doing this? What are you trying to prove?
Got it. Action, source, objective.
And the clarity, oh, that's everything. You can't just say check some assets. I mean, what does that even mean?
Right. It's too vague.
Exactly. A good procedure, say, for checking if assets physically exist, would be something like, select a sample of assets from the non-current asset register, that's your source, and physically inspect them, that's the action, to verify existence, the objective.
Ah, okay. Super specific. So you, the person reading the audit file, or even looking at the financials later, know exactly what was checked, how, and why.
That's the idea. No room for guessing.
Yeah, okay, this next part I find really interesting. Auditors don't just randomly pick procedures, do they? They seem to have a strategy. Directional testing?
Yeah, directional testing. It's quite clever, actually. It's based on, a sort of understanding of typical risks.
Which are?
Generally, the risk is higher that assets and expenses might be overstated, made to look bigger than they are.
Okay, makes sense. Boost the company's look.
Uh-huh. And conversely, liabilities and income are often more at risk of understatement, hiding debts, or not recording all the income.
Right. So how does the testing direction work?
Well, think about double entry. To test for understatement, say, of liabilities, you wouldn't just look at the list of liabilities they already have recorded.
Because if something's missing, it won't be on the list.
Exactly. So you sample from outside the main accounting records, maybe supplier statements or goods received notes. Then you trace those into the accounting system to make sure they were recorded. Completeness.
Ah, tracing in for understatement and overstatement.
The opposite. You start within the system. Take a sample from the asset register, for example, and trace it out to the physical asset or supporting documents like purchase invoices, verifying existence or valuation.
Okay, that's a really smart way to focus the effort where the risk is likely highest.
It makes the whole process much more efficient and targeted. It's about anticipating errors.
So that covers the strategy. But what about getting really solid proof? Especially for things like cash in the bank or money owed by customers. How do you get independent verification?
Right, because relying only on the client's internal documents has limits. This is where external confirmations are, kind of the gold standard.
Like talking directly to the bank.
Precisely. The bank confirmation letter is a classic. The auditor gets the client's permission, then asks the bank directly in writing to confirm balances, loans, any guarantees, things like that. It comes straight from the bank to the auditor.
Very direct. Minimizes client influence.
Absolutely. And similarly, for money owed by customers' receivables, auditors often use positive receivables circularizations.
Positive meaning?
Meaning they send letters to a sample of the client's customers asking them to apply directly to the auditor, confirming whether the balance shown is correct or not.
So the customer confirms the debt straight to the auditor?
Yes. Again, it bypasses the client. If you think about the bigger picture, this third-party evidence gives you, the user of the financial statements, a much higher degree of confidence.
Definitely feels more objective. Now, we've mostly talked about companies aiming for profit, but what about, say, charities?
Yeah.
Not for profits. The goals are different. The money flows differently.
That's a really important area, and yes, it brings unique challenges. NFP audits have their own specific risks.
Such as?
Well, internal controls can sometimes be weaker. You might have volunteer trustees who, you know, maybe don't have the time or expertise of a full-time finance director.
And maybe fewer staff, meaning less segregation of duties, like the person collecting cash is also recording it.
That can certainly be a risk, but a big focus is often on income recognition, especially donations and grants.
Why is that tricky?
Because of restricted funds. This is money given for a specific purpose. A donor says, here's money, but only for the new building or only for this specific project.
So the charity can't just use it for general running costs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the auditor needs to check not just that the income is recorded correctly, but that these restrictions are being followed, that the money is being spent as the donor intended.
So it's not just about profit or loss, but about fulfilling the mission and respecting donor intent.
Precisely. It adds another layer to the audit. Verifying impact and compliance, not just financial position.
Wow. Okay, so this deep dive really highlights how much unseen work goes into creating trustworthy financial information. It's quite an intricate structure.
It really is. And, you know, understanding just a bit about these procedures, directional testing, external confirmations, NFP risks, it's actually key for anyone making decisions based on financial reports.
Whether you're an investor, a donor, or just trying to understand a company.
Exactly. It helps you gauge the reliability. And maybe it leaves us all with a thought to ponder.
Go on.
What assumptions are you making about the numbers you encounter every single day? And what complex unseen procedures might have happened behind the scenes to check if they're actually true?